Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Georgetown University NCKF webinar. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require operator assistance during today's conference, please press star then zero on your touchtone telephone. As a reminder, this conference call is being recorded. I would now like to introduce your host for today's call, Ms. Liz Arjun. Ma'am, you may begin.
Thanks, Howard. Hello, friends. Thanks for being with us today on the first national Covering Kids and Families Network webinar of the year. We're excited about today's topic, CHIPRA, and the timing of this webinar couldn't be better. We, in planning this webinar, it was right after the awarding of performance bonuses late last year for states that have been doing a really good job on reaching eligible but unenrolled kids by cutting red tape. And in thinking about it, we realized also that it was going to be the second anniversary of the signing of the Children's Health Insurance Program Reauthorization Act coming up. And so we thought, what a great topic. And we also were excited to hear that CMS is also announcing a new round of outreach grants. And so we couldn't have a better topic for today. So we have a lot of information that we're going to cover. So today we're going to talk a little bit about CHIPRA and some of the new opportunities that that are available to states. And then we're going to spend some time talking about ways that states can go after performance bonus dollars. And then we're going to hear from a state that actually did that last year. The timing was a quick turnaround for them, and they're a really good example of what can happen if a state really puts their mind to it. And then we're thrilled to have with us Jennifer Ryan from CMS, who's going to talk to us a little bit about what they're doing on CHIPRA and tell us a little bit about their new round of outreach grants. Before we get into the heart of our webinar today, I did want to ask Judy Kramer to give an update on network activities for folks on today's webinar so they can hear what's going on with the network. Judy?
Ms. Kramer, could you please press star then zero on your touchtone telephone?
Okay. All right. If Judy isn't on right now, then we can actually have her do the announcement.
Sorry, ma'am.
Oh.
Go ahead,
Ms.
Kramer.
Sorry, Judy.
Okay, sorry. A little bit delay there in technology. So welcome, everyone. Glad to have everyone on board. I'm just really happy to report that we've seen some growth and expansion in our membership. And for those of you that were able to be at our reception in conjunction with the Families USA conference, thank you for being there. And I know we signed up some new members there, but I thought you might be interested to know that as of today, we have 183 individual members from among 97 organizations. And this week alone, I have received applications from six new members from three new organizations from three different states. So if you're on the call today and you haven't had the opportunity to join us, I would encourage you to do that. And Teresa Hescheck is the chair of the membership. And you can go to the CCF website, and our membership application is there. And if you have questions, you can contact Teresa or myself. Our contact information is on the application form. So, and it's an easy one-pager to fill out. So we look forward to having you join us. So thank you, Liz.
Thanks, Judy. And just for folks to see real quick, we did put up the NCKF website. There's a link to membership there on the right-hand side. So our first presenter today is Tricia Brooks, who's a senior fellow here at the Center for Children and Families at Georgetown University. And she is an expert in all things CHIPRA, and especially in efforts to simplify and streamline enrollment and renewal process. And I'm always learning new things from her. So take it away, Tricia.
Thanks, Liz, and thanks for joining us today, everyone. I know that we've had, over the past couple of years, a few of these webinars where we've talked about performance bonus, but we certainly know that many of you are new to this work or new to your organizations, and we've learned more about CHIPRA implementation and performance bonuses as time has gone on, and so we always think it's good to remind folks of what's in the Reauthorization Act and some of the opportunities to advance coverage for children and families. So I'm going to talk about the more before I talk about the performance bonuses and just hit some of the highlights of CHIPRA. But there was lots of good stuff in that Reauthorization Act, which was, I think, the third official act that President Obama undertook when he became president. And in that, it solved a lot of the prior weaknesses or shortcomings in CHIP, such as uneven funding levels and states running out of allotment. And now with CHIPRA, there is much higher funding levels. There are a number of safety valves so that states are very unlikely to run out of enough CHIP money to keep their programs expanding. There was also explicit authority to cover kids up to 300% of the poverty level. If you remember back during the Bush years, there was an executive order that, or a directive called the 817, because it was issued on a Friday night in August by the administration, that basically made it difficult for states to go above 250% of the poverty level, and CHIPRA cleared that up. There were also new benefit options, including some requirements for dental benefits that had not been part of CHIP, as well as a new option for states to create a standalone dental plan for kids who have medical insurance but are CHIP eligible and did not have dental insurance. Unfortunately, some of these options came along about the same time as our state economic woes, and so we've only seen one state, which is Iowa, implementing that standalone dental plan. But I think when the economic pendulum swings back, we'll see states looking at that again, because it's always been a very popular provision. Also, there are a number of new quality provisions and demonstration projects and new data reporting requirements, all intended to make sure that we continue to look at ways to improve these programs. So with that, one of the particular CHIPRA provisions I thought was worth noting was the electronic match with the Social Security Administration to verify citizenship. For those of you that were around back when the Deficit Reduction Act of 2005 was implemented, know that new requirements for verifying citizenship in Medicaid put some very onerous paperwork responsibilities on states and families in terms of verifying their citizenship, and it became a real nightmare for many states, and it certainly inhibited enrollment of citizen children that were eligible for the program. So when CHIPRA came along, although we were a little disappointed to see that that citizenship requirement was going to be put on CHIP as well, there was relief given to the states to build on an existing data exchange that exists between the states and the Social Security Administration to verify citizenship. And I'm pleased to say that based on the 50-state Kaiser survey that CCF does in partnership with the Kaiser Commission on Medicaid and the Uninsured, we know that in 2010, 29 states adopted this provision, and another 15 more plan to implement it in 2011. And we've heard all sorts of great stories about how cost-effective it is. This map gives you a sense of who those states are in terms of their implementation or their plans to implement in 2011. But I just want to share one story with you to give you an idea of the efficiencies gained, and that is with Washington State, which had a very robust unit that helped families to meet those citizenship documentation requirements. At one point, they had 38 full-time employees working with families to help them come up with the paperwork they needed to prove their citizenship. And now that unit is now a quarter-time one person, quarter-time person. So they saved a huge amount of money, not only in those staff costs, but also they were helping families to pay for securing the documents that were needed when they needed an out-of-state birth certificate or that sort of thing. So it's been, it's just been wonderful. It's been a very accurate way to verify citizenship. So if your state is one of the white states on this map, which means that you haven't implemented, nor did you tell us during the survey that you plan to implement in 2011, this is one area where the state can really save some money in administrative cost. So moving on from there, I also wanted to mention a couple of the expansion opportunities within CHIPRA, very specifically the ability to lift the five-year bar or the five-year waiting period for immigrant children and pregnant women. This has also proven to be a very popular provision in CHIPRA. Previously, federal funds were available only for lawfully residing children and pregnant women after they had been in the country for more than 5 years. And while a number of these states actually had been covering kids with state-only dollars, it was, I'm sure, gratefully welcomed federal funding in to help support those costs. But at least seven of the states that have expanded coverage were new to the game. So CHIPRA, again, did result in some new eligibility levels as well. So this map also shows you the states that have adopted it for both children and pregnant women or one or the other group, as well as states that have submitted a state plan amendment and are waiting on approval from CMS on those. And then before I move into the performance bonus, I do want to mention, and I think we'll hear a little more from Jen later on, about the outreach tools that are available to enroll eligible children. In CHIPRA, there was $100 million for outreach, and $10 million was for a national outreach campaign that included the summit that we that CMS hosted back in November of 2009. There was $10 million for outreach to Native Americans and Alaskan Natives, and then $80 million to be awarded in outreach grants. The first round of $40 million was awarded in September of 2009, and now CMS, on the CHIPRA anniversary, very appropriately, the party favor was to announce a new round of $40 million in grants. And I think at the after the webinar, Liz is going to put up two links or send you two links for blogs that we've written on performance bonus and the outreach grants that provide you with all the links you need to additional materials, including the grant application. The other thing that CHIPRA provided in terms of outreach was enhanced match for translation and interpretation services, and I know we have a blog on that as well, and Ann Bachrach started a really nice thread on the NCKF listserv and got some really great ideas from states on that. And we'll hear more from Jen on things like connecting kids to coverage, and the challenge, and the Get in the Game campaign, which enlists efforts for coaches and rec departments and other sort of sports activities to help us identify and enroll kids. And then some new and exciting updates to the Ensure Kids Now website. So now I want to move into performance bonus. Just want to give the basics on performance bonus. It is to reward states and to help offset the cost of enrolling low-income children in Medicaid. It's really important that there's been over time the focus on, are we, you know, we're raising these eligibility levels, but there's still lots of kids, you know, below the poverty level that are uninsured and unenrolled. So the performance bonus was really geared toward getting, you know, targeting those low-income kids in Medicaid. In order to earn a performance bonus, states have to meet two requirements. The first is they have to meet very specific enrollment targets for kids in Medicaid. And then secondly, they have to implement at least 5 of 8 specific measures that are aimed at increasing enrollment. So before I go into those measures, this slide is hard to read, but for those of you who are data junkies or like numbers, it gives you a sense of what the targets are. They are cumulative annual increases over the average monthly enrollment for federal fiscal year 07. For the first 2 years, it was an annual increase of 4%, and then now it's down in the 3.5% range, and eventually will go to 3%. That increase is also adjusted by the percentage change in child population. So if your child population is growing, then those targets are going to be a little higher. If your child population is shrinking, those targets are going to be lower. And then there are actually 2 bonus levels. One is that if you meet the target for the number of kids that you enroll above the target, you get 15% of the state's share of Medicaid. But the real dollars start to accumulate very quickly when you get into Tier 2, so that if you exceed that target by 110%, for that first 10%, you get that 15% bonus. But above the 10%, the state gets back 62.5% of its share of Medicaid. So if your Medicaid match is really high and you add another 62% of your share, your state's share to that, really the federal government ends up picking up over 90% of the cost of enrolling additional kids. So that's a really great bonus. And I love slides that when you count, it goes from 1 to 7 and 7 again. So we'll disregard that and say that the second 7 on this slide is 8. But these are the 8 measures to improve enrollment and retention. Several of them are pretty straightforward. A couple of them need some additional explanation, and I think that some of that explanation is better had individually talking one-on-one about how your state does things. So I'll identify those and certainly offer some additional resources for you to help figure out where your state stands. First of all is 12 months continuous coverage. We know most all states have 12-month renewal, but 12-month continuous coverage guarantees that regardless of changes in circumstances, with the exception of someone moving out of state or aging out of the program, that those kids are guaranteed 12 months of coverage. And that's important from a number of perspectives, not to mention that it helps us to measure quality of care by having kids continuously enrolled and the fact that it saves money not having to make changes in the course of the year. The second is the elimination of the asset test, or for the couple of states that continue to have asset tests, it is you can have administrative verification or assets or self-declaration that also qualifies. Then third is the elimination of face-to-face interviews, and both of these, by the way, are at new application and renewal. The fourth are the use of joint applications or interchangeable applications so that you're not asking a family if they apply to one program and they're not eligible for that program, having to fill out a separate application for a different program. So the interchangeability will qualify. And then having comparable procedures in terms of the documents that families need to provide, the timelines that they need to provide those in. So that one usually requires a little bit of talking through, as does administrative renewals, which fundamentally is either sending someone a pre-populated form that has the information available to the agency regarding that family's circumstances, and basically requiring the family to do nothing if nothing has changed, with the exception of signing and confirming that they want to continue coverage. That piece of the signing and confirming coverage was really important to states that have managed care in their plans because they don't want to be paying capitated rates if someone has gained other coverage. So that was the one caveat there. The fifth one is presumptive eligibility, and then the sixth one, we really have our numbers messed up here. The sixth one is express lane eligibility, and we know that six states have adopted that, and I know people are more interested in learning about how their state can step into express lane eligibility, so that's another item we could talk about. For all of those seven, there needs to be implementation in both CHIP and Medicaid. For the eighth one, it is regarding premium assistance. There were some new options for Medicaid and CHIP premium assistance in CHIPRA, and that only needs to be implemented in one program or the other. So I'm not going to go through these charts. These are available for the presentation for you to be able to print out and compare. But these were the 2010 awards, 15 state earned awards, over $200 million. I think that, if I remember right, 10 got into Tier 2 bonus territory, and you can quickly see how that adds up when you look at states that got $54,000 or, $14 million, that really is because they've gotten into the Tier 2 level. And then we provided you with the same information from the prior year, just so you can compare that. In closing, a couple of words about moving forward for a performance bonus in federal fiscal year 11. If one of the measures required legislation in your state, it would have needed to have been enacted by October 1st of 2010. But there are a number of measures that don't require legislative action, and as you'll hear from Sandy in Ohio, by executive order, Governor Strickland put a couple of measures into place in a matter of a few weeks last year. So those measures have to be operational by April 1. Of this year and remain in effect through the end of the federal fiscal year. And as I mentioned before, they have to be in effect for both Medicaid and CHIP with the exception of premium assistance. So in closing, we really have a lot of opportunities with CHIPRA to move coverage forward. We know that we have achieved a record high of more than 90% of American children having coverage, and we know that two-thirds of the uninsured children are currently eligible for Medicaid and CHIP. We know that adopting many of these measures to streamline enrollment and renewal can really help us reach these kids and do it in an effective way that makes government look good and achieves administrative cost savings. But no matter what we do to streamline and make enrollment and renewal smoother for families, outreach continues to matter. Being able to provide application assistance and doing outreach through community-based partners continues to be important, and so we hope you'll take a look at those CHIPRA outreach grants to see what makes sense for your state.
Thanks so much, Tricia. Howard, we're going to open it up for questions now in case anybody has questions for Tricia and what she just talked about.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question or comment at this time, please press star then one on your telephone keypad. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, simply press the pound key. Again, to ask a question or comment at this time, please press star then one on your telephone keypad.
While we're waiting on people to queue up, I do want to let you know that both Shelby Gonzalez who, from the Center on Budget Policy and Priorities, who partners with us in providing technical assistance to the network, and I am available to you to talk through your state situation. I'm sure Jen has lots of resources at CMS to help talk through, but sometimes it helps to get a sense of where you think your state is before going and talking to your state about it. And so you should feel free, if you don't want to ask specific questions about your state on this call, to contact us at any time via email or telephone to walk through your state situation.
I'm showing no audio questions at this time, ma'am.
Thanks, Howard. Okay, well, with that, we're going to turn it over then to Sandy Erb from Voices for Ohio's Children. She is the state field director there. And Sandy has graciously taken her time. She's out doing work around the state, and so she's going to talk to us a little bit about what they did last year, as Tricia mentioned earlier, to move quickly on getting their state in a position to receive a performance bonus this year. Sandy?
Thanks, Liz. Hi, everyone. I'm pleased to be here this afternoon and want to especially acknowledge Tricia Brooks and Cindy Mann, who have both been instrumental in Ohio over the last several years and helping us with getting our CHIPR performance bonus through. Voices for Ohio's Children, just to give you our background, we work on public policy that improves the health, safety, education, family stability, and child care for Ohio's children and their families. We're the affiliate for Voices for America's Children, the nation's largest network of multi-issue child advocacy organizations. So I'm speaking today as someone not only in the trenches who lives in that space where decisions and public policy intersect with the impact that policies have on children and their families. In Ohio, we do have a strong Medicaid and CHIP program for children, which is why we have seen a steady improvement over the last several years in our child uninsured rate since the late 1990s. We cover currently in Ohio children up to 200% of the federal poverty level, and that income level has not changed since 2000. By contrast, however, we do cover parents only up to 90% of the federal poverty level. So it's fair to say that Ohio struggles with the issue of modernization across the public programs. Our eligibility system for cash assistance, Medicaid, and food stamps is a decades-old legacy system that is not only burdensome but grossly outdated and nowhere near what a 21st century system could or should be. Despite that, we have made some tremendous progress and made some smart decisions to cut the red tape in enrollment and renewal processes. We're proud of our process, especially recently, but also recognize that we have a long way to go, and many other states across the country serve as models and inspiration for us. The big story in Ohio in 2010 is that our state quickly moved for fast implementation of simplification measures. Our now former governor, Ted Strickland, was the first governor in the country to accept the Connecting Kids to Coverage Challenge, and he did that on March 10th of 2010 at our Ohio Covering Kids and Families Conference. And as part of that, he committed to enrolling all of Ohio's uninsured eligible children within 5 years. With that, he implemented an executive order and committed to implementing presumptive eligibility for children and pregnant women, 12-month continuous eligibility, as well as express lane eligibility. Exactly 3 weeks later, kind of on a whirlwind, on April 1st of last year, presumptive eligibility for kids and 12-month continuous eligibility for children were operational. And a huge thank you to Tricia Brooks and Donna Cohen-Ross, who provided counsel and technical assistance not only to advocates in our state, but to state officials as well. Just illustrating, I really want people to understand that doing this in 3 weeks is certainly not the suggested practice, and doing it in 21 days was a huge deal. First and foremost, it shows that government really can move fast and efficiently when needed, but and that's an important lesson in and of itself in working in the avenues of public policy. Beyond that, I think that we learned three main lessons in Ohio. The first being leadership counts. While Ohio had been making steady progress on some of the simplification measures for the previous year or so, things like telephone renewals and changing 12-month renewal period for parents, And there was certainly interest and commitment on the part of Medicaid and Human Services leaders to go further. It was the governor's public commitment that provided the impetus for us to move, not to mention, you know, Secretary Sebelius issuing the challenge. You have to certainly lay the groundwork. These changes are more than policy and operational changes. For full implementation, they require cultural changes in a way that we approach our public programs. The advocacy community had been working for the past several years to lay that groundwork for these reforms. Everyone from the governor to cabinet directors to legislative leaders and the county eligibility agencies know as a result of a lot of work and education that two-thirds of Ohio's uninsured kids are currently eligible for Medicaid and CHIP, but they're not enrolled. So that many of those kids had recently been enrolled and lost their coverage at renewal, not because they're not eligible any longer, but because the paperwork and administrative barriers. So we clearly have to focus on retention in Ohio, and they know that there are some of the tools that the states can implement to address these issues. So the governor's public announcement and commitment didn't come out of the blue for us. It was part of a narrative that had been built over the past several years, supported not only by advocates but by data and examples from other states. In fact, Ruth Kennedy had attended a number of meetings in Ohio the previous year, really illustrating how some of the simplification measures can certainly help move the needle to getting kids enrolled in Medicaid and CHIP. This was evident by bipartisan support as well. It happened in April, all the while our looming state budget deficit had already been known for the better part of the year. And on one hand, you can look at these policies as contributing to higher costs in the Medicaid program by bringing more kids into coverage and keeping them covered longer. But on the other hand, folks on both sides of the aisle understand that it's about making Medicaid more efficient, about making sure that our limited dollars are not spent on pushing paper, but making sure that kids who are eligible can get and keep the coverage that they need. And recognition that it can also provide some administrative relief for county agencies to determine eligibility. And those county agencies had already taken a pretty large hit in the state budget process. So this was one of the ways that we could also get support from that level. The third lesson is that incentives work. The aggressive timeline was driven by the possibility of securing CHIP performance bonus dollars. We were very clear that we had to hit an April 1st implementation date to qualify for those bonus dollars, and it's likely that the ability of those CHIP performance dollars and those bonus awards for the next several years will provide some protection for the, maintaining the measures that, we were successful in implementing. So with that, let me shift gears a little and talk a little bit more concretely why about why these policies matter. Certainly, preaching to the choir on this call that Medicaid and CHIP work, like the country, Ohio's uninsured rate for kids has steadily improved since the late 1990s. The trend has come at the same time as a growing poverty rate, a decline in employer-sponsored insurance, and a rise in the uninsured rate for adults. We know that coverage alone isn't the whole picture, but it's an important, and coverage works. Kids enrolled in Medicaid and CHIP are more likely to have well child visits, childhood vaccinations, and certainly more consistent medical treatments. And they also have fewer hospitalizations and emergency room visits. And the stability of coverage is important as well, not only about finding and enrolling children, but it's about keeping eligible children enrolled so they can get preventative services they need. So going on to our other policy, we implemented 12-month continuous eligibility. You know, in real issues, that means that a working mom who gets a modest raise during the course of the year that might push her barely over the eligibility threshold doesn't have to worried that her child will lose the health care coverage. While the majority of kids in our state are covered by Medicaid are now on the lower end of the income level, we've been hearing from a lot more parents who are near that 200% level, and the anticipation of more hours worked or a raise is something that could have them facing the possibility of losing health coverage for their kids as a result. So some actually, you know, have to balance that with the eligibility status for their children. So that 12-month continuous eligibility takes away that pervasive incentive and at least for a year gives the child and the family the peace of mind that they won't be losing their health coverage because of a possibility of a positive opportunity at work. And then cutting the red tape has helped eligibility agencies better manage growing caseloads. Our county job and family services agencies are the bodies who determine eligibility are quite frankly overwhelmed. With the last 4 years, they have sustained a 40% cut in funding, with many programs that they administer experience a larger than 50% increase in need. They're operating with 3,250 fewer staff than just 3 years ago. So clearly, streamlining and modernization are key. Now that families can renew their eligibility via phone rather than in person, it takes less time and hassle for the family and the eligibility worker. Just as importantly, the 12-month continuous eligibility means the caseworker will be touching the case only once during the year rather than the possibility of multiple times. So of greater interest for both the agencies and advocates in Ohio is the use of data matching for verification of information up front rather than asking families to produce paper. We're not nearly where we could be or where we should be, but we are of one accord that this is absolutely a next step that we must take. Finally, we can't forget the simple truth that it's about kids. Over and over, the public has demonstrated strong support for kids' health, and behind all the statistics and policies and jargon are real people who don't see health care for their kids through a partisan lens. They simply want to know that they can get the health care coverage for their children when they lose a job or when they have to try and balance that family budget with fewer earnings or when they get sick or are unemployed and unemployment runs out and there are no other options. So certainly Ohio has made a lot of progress. In the last few weeks, we have received notification that we will be receiving a performance bonus, and that due largely in part of Governor Strickland's efforts and commitment by executive order to implement presumptive eligibility and 12-month continuous eligibility for kids. We haven't got there with our express lane eligibility, but we are anticipating and advocating that we're hoping that some of the CHIPR bonus dollars can certainly go toward the data matching and some of the other streamlining measures. So we could, as Tricia mentioned, there are two tiers. Ohio was like 0.1% from getting to that second tier, which have meant substantially an enhanced match for us and our CHIPR bonus. But this year we were successful in getting to that first tier level, and a few million dollars coming into the state at this time is certainly a welcomed experience, not only for our departing Democratic governor, but our incoming Republican governor as well. So that's just a snippet of the Ohio experience. There are certainly many more details, ugly details that we could go into, and Tricia could elaborate about the amount of time we spent and energy and making this happen, but certainly Ohio's kids win in the end. Thanks. So with that, I am finished with my presentation.
Thank you so much, Sandy. And there were some really helpful lessons for folks who are thinking about this. I mean, I think the work is ongoing, and there's always more to do. And We appreciate your comments about seeking and getting bipartisan support for this, because it really is not a partisan issue. I want to again open it up for questions in case people have questions for Sandy about the experience in Ohio. And I just want to make one more comment really quickly. It does take, you know, a long concerted campaign sometimes to make these things happen, but I think the leadership can make a huge difference. And I know of a couple of other examples of states who quickly moved, not necessarily to get themselves up for a performance bonus, but to make administrative changes when it comes to something like 12-month continuous eligibility. I know that Oregon and Washington both did that via governor's action, so it can happen in other places. And Shelby and Tricia and Jen, I'm sure, also are all willing to talk with states individually about how to make it happen in their state. So, again, Howard, can you please remind people how to queue up for questions?
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, if you have a question or comment at this time, please press star then one on your telephone keypad.
Okay.
Sure, no audio questions at this time, ma'am.
Okay, thanks so much, Howard. Thanks again, Sandy. And just again, Sandy is also on the leadership committee of the NCKF network, and we really appreciate you taking your time to talk with us today about your experience. So I'm now going to turn it over to Jennifer Ryan, who is the Acting Deputy Director for Policy for Children and Adults, Children and Adults Health Programs at the Center for Medicaid, CHIP and Survey and Certification. I don't even know if I have that title right because it is quite a mouthful, but she's recently moved from her position as a senior advisor to Cindy Mann, who many of us are familiar with. And before Jennifer gets into the details about what we asked her to talk about today, I did want her to tell us a little bit about what she's doing in her new role at CMS.
Thanks so much, Liz, and nice job on the title. I'm still practicing saying it myself. So I both have a new title, and then we've actually just changed the name of our group. So the group used to be known as the Family and Children's Health Programs Group, but sort of in recognition of our expanding role in light of the Affordable Care Act, we've changed our name to focus on children and adults health programs. So just really broadening the scope and increasing the emphasis of the huge expansion that's coming in 2014. So I'll just spend 1 minute on my role. So I think, you know, the group's function includes everything from eligibility policy to the operations of the federal part of the CHIP program to review and approval of 1115 waivers. And then our group also has all of the quality and oral health initiatives that are housed actually for the center. So the quality division actually does quality for the whole center for Medicaid CHIP and survey and certification. So as the deputy director for policy, I'm, you know, sort of sharing the workload with Vicky Wachino, who's the director, and many of you know, and hopefully we're going to take a divide and conquer approach and try to just really keep things moving even more efficiently to work with our state partners and work with all of you. So. So thanks, Tricia, for setting the stage for me. You saved me a lot of time. I don't have to go into a lot of the details of CHIPRA. And Sandy, congratulations again to Ohio on the performance bonus. I happen to have the pleasure of being in Ohio when the governor made his announcement, both that he was accepting the challenge and also that he was going to move forward on adding the two program simplifications in hopes of working toward a performance bonus. And Cindy Mann was there as well and was able to join the governor on stage to do a ribbon-cutting ceremony. It was a big, wide red ribbon, which I think was supposed to symbolize cutting the red tape. And it was pretty funny, actually, because Cindy had a little bit of a hard time getting through her part of the red tape, which we thought was sort of a telling point of the federal government, but she does proudly have her ribbon displayed in her office now. So we were thrilled to be able to work with Ohio to get a bonus this year. So I'll just spend a few minutes giving you an update on our CHIPRA implementation efforts here at CMS, and also to share with you the new opportunity for continuing our collective efforts to enroll children through the outreach and enrollment grants that we were able to announce last week. As we celebrate the second anniversary of the passage of TIPRA, we're certainly taking the opportunity to step back and take in all the progress that has continued over the past 2 years at the state and the community levels, and also at the federal level. We're fairly happy with some of the progress that's been made here, and we're certainly continuing to work to assist states and communities to do this important work, particularly in light of the economic situation that we're continuing to have to deal with. One exciting thing to celebrate, I think, is that states have really raised the bar on eligibility at this point. We've got 46 states in the District of Columbia covering children with incomes up to 200% of the poverty level in Medicaid and CHIP, and 24 of those states in the district are covering kids with incomes up to 250% of the poverty level. That's a real paradigm shift from where we began when CHIP was created 13 years ago, and really is a true sign of states and all of your work to advance children's coverage across the country. Just over a year ago, Secretary Sebelius announced the Connecting Kids to Coverage Challenge, which is designed to engage government agencies and all organizations with a stake in advancing children's coverage to take some affirmative steps toward enrolling eligible uninsured children in Medicaid and CHIP. You've all heard the disturbing number that 5 million kids are thought to be eligible for these programs that are not enrolled at this point. And so the Secretary has challenged all of us to find ways to reach those children. And TIPRA provides a lot of support for this challenge, as well as a lot of funding. And so we're just really working hard with a range of stakeholders to continue to generate interest in the challenge and to work together to make some accomplishments in that area. We've got so far over 100 organizations and individuals have registered their support. There's a website called www.challenge.gov, which is actually a federal website that's tracking a wide range of government challenges that are out in the world and is tracking supporters and interest, and I think ultimately we'll be evaluating who's successful in their challenges. We have a diverse group of organizations that have stepped up to the challenge, from local United Way agencies to community health centers to actually the Philadelphia Eagles Youth Partnership. And the Children's Defense Fund across the country has formally stepped up to share their strategies that they're using to connect kids to coverage. As Tricia mentioned, we've also launched last summer the Get Covered, Get in the Game campaign, which we kind of refer to as the Coaches Campaign for shorthand. And that's a pilot program that took place in 7 states last summer: Colorado, Florida, Maryland, New York, Ohio, Wisconsin, and Oregon participated, and it was an interesting project, and I think, you know, it was truly a pilot, so I think it'll be interesting to get some of the results back. We had made a request for the 7 states to submit some evaluation materials in a progress report that was just due, I think, in January, so we'll have some results to share and maybe some best practices about how those campaigns went within the next few months. I think the result of all these efforts at the state and community level is really evident in the Medicaid and CHIP enrollment numbers we were able to release last week. Those numbers are that during federal fiscal year 2010, children's Medicaid and CHIP enrollment increased by over 2 million children. Together, the programs served more than 42 million children over the course of the past year. Indeed, Medicaid and CHIP are serving the purpose for which they were created. The state uninsurance rates among children continue to hold steady or even decline at a time when more adults are becoming uninsured each month. And as we all know, states are experiencing serious financial pressures, and so are America's families. And so the fact that states have continued to reach out and enroll these children and to continue improving their enrollment and renewal processes on top of it shows really that healthy children continue to be a priority across the country. Tricia's talked a lot about the performance bonuses, and I know that's a big focus of this call. I was really pleased to be able to participate in this conversation this spring. As you know, as Tricia mentioned, the way the statute is set up, we've got to have the program features in place by April 1st in order for states to qualify for the performance bonuses. And last year, as I think we've already mentioned, we were able to award $206 million in performance bonuses for fiscal year 2010, and those bonuses went to 15 states across the country and resulted in, by our calculations, about 875,000 more children being enrolled above the baseline level that was established for 2010. The enrollment increases ranged from 6% to 36% above the baseline levels, and 10 of the 15 states that had enrollment increases above 10% or more, qualifying them for a larger Tier 2 bonus award, as Tricia talked about. So we're actually now, and we should probably be coordinating a little bit more, Tricia, we're setting up some technical assistance teams here that are being manned by staff from our from my group and then also from the regional offices to talk with states and offer them our assistance in terms of meeting the criteria for the various program features. And so we've started a process of reaching out to states that are interested in talking more. We're particularly targeting those states that were maybe close to getting a bonus this year but didn't quite make it, and also some of the states that didn't apply for getting the features in place for 2010. And so we're going to be working over the next couple of months to make sure that those states that are interested have the opportunity to get their state plan amendments in and make those changes effective by April 1st so that they can qualify for 2011. We started conversations with at least three states, Virginia, North Dakota, and Montana. So certainly let us know if you're interested in learning more about this. We'd be happy to coordinate at the community level as well. And one of the things we've been able to share, we just sent out kind of an updated version of a performance bonus calculator that helps states and anyone actually who's interested take a look at what type of bonus they could qualify for if a state were to meet the program features for next year. So hopefully that'll prove to be an incentive for some states that perhaps didn't think they were in the running this time around. Finally, to help us continue to move forward, last Thursday we were able to announce the release of another round of CHIPRA outreach and enrollment grants. So it'll be another $40 million in grants to promote enrollment and retention in Medicaid and CHIP coverage. As you know, we awarded the first round of outreach grants in September 2009, and we made awards to 68 grantees across 41 states, and they have been working diligently to identify and enroll children and retain them in coverage. So this year we decided to take a slightly more targeted approach to the grants, hopefully to encourage grantees to focus their efforts on areas that we know have been the children who are the hardest to reach in various circumstances. So we're asking applicants this year to choose one of five areas of focus to target their proposals, and so they'll select one of the five following areas to focus their applications. The first area is using technology to facilitate enrollment and renewal. What we mean there is working to modernize eligibility systems in states, but also to work at the community level to streamline processes and help make it possible to communicate more effectively with families. So this particular area, I think, will be of a lot of interest and is definitely meant to be available both to states and to community groups. Some examples of what might be considered would be creating a new or augmenting an existing online application, adding electronic signature capability, adding personal account management functions, or extending the reach of online applications that are already existing through community-based organizations like perhaps wiring a health center or other organization. We're also looking for simplifications to the renewal processes, like implementing use of a pre-populated renewal form, and also potentially enhancing systems for verification of data that would be provided by families. When we did the call last week, we got a couple of questions about the regulation that's out, that was a proposed rollout in the Federal Register in November, that provides enhanced federal matching, Medicaid matching funds for systems enhancements at the 90% rate for states. And the general approach that we're trying to take here is that states should, that everyone applying should be just mindful of not overlapping their efforts through this funding source with things that could be done with the 90-10 funding. And we certainly are open to having further questions answered about that in one of our applicant calls that I'll talk about in a minute. The second area is focusing on retention. It's certainly one of the key areas that needs improvement in many states. And we're encouraging applicants to take strategies to ensure that children stay enrolled as long as they qualify. Some areas could be simplified renewal processes, such as administrative renewal systems or pre-populated forms, as we discussed earlier. Also, states or could use rolling renewal procedures, under which families can renew child coverage when they visit a healthcare provider or a WIC clinic or other community sites. Or they could also implement alternative payment policies, such as internet-based payment or payroll reduction for premiums. So those are some examples to help improve retention. The third area is engaging schools. more actively in outreach and enrollment and renewal activities. Certainly, we all know that schools are widely accepted as an important setting for conducting children's health coverage outreach and enrollment activities. And past efforts have taught us a great deal about how to engage school nurses and athletic coaches to do this work. The fourth area is an emphasis on reaching out to groups of children where significant gaps or health disparities exist. Certainly, we all know that many studies have identified gaps in Medicaid and CHIP coverage among Latino communities and other cultural minority groups, certainly among Native Americans as well. And so we wanted to provide a grant area for focusing efforts on those particular populations. And finally, we wanted to do a focus on adolescents. I think we also know that children who are 13 and older are less likely to be enrolled in coverage than children who are younger, and we wanted to work to learn more about specific strategies that are effective to ensure that teens get the coverage they need. And so the applications for the second round of grants will be due on April 18th, and we expect to make the awards in July 2011. We noticeably provided a little bit of a longer period for the application process, in part to make room for the technology element, because we think that's going to take a little more thinking. And the solicitation document notes that the grants can range in size from $200,000 up to $2.5 million for the technology proposals. The upper limit for the non-technology proposals is $1 million. And so you can find the grant solicitation on two websites. One is, I don't know, Liz, if you're able to show our viewers the Ensure Kids Now website, the For Professionals page.
Yep, we're on there right now, and it has the CHIPR Outreach and Enrollment Grants with the five topic areas, and we've been sort of going around the website while you've been talking. So.
Good. Okay, I was focusing on my notes, not looking at the screen.
Good.
you can find quite a few things there. The grant solicitation is available both on this website and then also on grants.gov, which is the site that applicants need to go to apply for the actual grant. They'll need to go through the grants.gov website. So we have a notation there, as pointed to, and then that you want to refer to the CFDA number, which is 93.767. I just did a search before I got on, and it's not the easiest to find, so do use that number as a reference. And we also, as I mentioned, we're going to have several applicant teleconferences where folks can dial in and hear an overview of the grant solicitation, but then more importantly have some of their questions answered. We'll also be posting some of the frequently answered Q's and A's on our website on an ongoing basis over the next few months. But our first call is scheduled for next Tuesday, February 15th. And I think, it's from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And the call and information will be circulated around very shortly. I think we're still working out the call operator, but we'll get that around as quickly as we can. And finally, sorry I've gone on a little bit long here, but we also released our second annual CHIPR anniversary report, which provides a summary of all of the collective activities and accomplishments over the past year. Highlights several of our grantees from Cycle 1, from school-based enrollment efforts in Colorado to a phone-a-thon in Massachusetts, and several of our state's efforts as well to streamline their enrollment and renewal processes. And as you can see, it's up on our website. And so we've also, as I wanted to highlight the website during my talk today, just to let folks know that we've added some enhancements to the Ensure Kids Now website and hopefully some areas that will be of interest to folks out in the world. The For Professionals section now includes some helpful tracking charts as well. We're calling them trackers that lets everyone know a little more comprehensively which states are doing express lane eligibility, how many states have continuous eligibility. And so if you click on any one of those, you'll see these tracking charts that list the states that have taken up these options and have received approval from CMS. So we will keep those updated regularly, so they'll hopefully be a useful resource for you to get quick information rather than having to wait for email responses from some of us who are not very good at keeping up. And we've also refreshed some of the materials on Ensure Kids Now for outreach organizations and consumers in hopes that they also will have an easier time finding information about the programs in their states. There's a new button there that's called Programs in Your State on the left side, and that provides a few more links now about the actual programs in each state. It connects you to your state-based websites and also in some cases provides some information about providers that are available. So, and then finally, apparently, InsureKids Now is now on a Facebook. We have a Facebook page, although we're not allowed to look at it from the federal government computer, so we haven't, I haven't seen it yet, but I hear it's good, and I think we've got about 6 fans or whatever it's called, 6 friends. So I encourage you to check it out on Facebook as well. So I'll stop there and be happy to take any questions.
Thanks so much, Jen. That was really helpful. Howard, can you please remind people how to queue up for questions?
Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question or comment at this time, please press star then 1 on your telephone keypad.
So while we're waiting for people to queue up, I wanted to ask Jen a question. Forgive me, Jen, if you mentioned this as I was helping Liz navigate the website, so may have spaced it out, but a lot of people really loved the conference in November of 2009, the National Summit. And any plans for repeating that?
Yes, thanks for tossing that one to me. Yes, we have plans. Nothing formal yet, so don't buy any plane tickets. But I think the plan will be to do something within a reasonable period after the second round of grants are awarded. So if we award those grants, say, by the end of July, we'd like to have a conference in the early fall. So we're still looking for locations, but probably late September is where we're aiming at this point. But it'll be on a similar scale as the last one, and probably going to be potentially in Atlanta. So we haven't totally decided yet, but we're going to try to make sure it's out in the country, out in the center of the country somewhere, so people can get there.
Atlanta in July or September? No, September's fine.
Yeah.
Okay,
it'll be more pleasant, right?
I'm sure no audio questions at this time, ma'am.
Okay. Jen, we were just looking for the Facebook page, but we couldn't find it because we thought you'd like to see it.
I would. I probably couldn't see it if I tried, but yes.
Well, again, thanks so much for being with us today. That information was really helpful, and it's great to see all the changes that you've all made to the website. I feel like it's a lot more user-friendly, and the pictures are great, and so thank you so much for all the work that you are doing. I think we're all benefiting from it. So, again, if we have any questions, now is the time. Otherwise, we're going to end our webinar a little bit early, which I'm sure everybody appreciates because I know it's getting late in the day here on the East Coast. So, Howard, can you again remind people about queuing up?
Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question or comment at this time, please press star then 1 on your telephone keypad. We have a question or comment from the line of Ms. Pat Rails from Action Network. Your line is open.
Thank you. I don't have a question. I really have a comment. Some of our folks are in Tallahassee today, and we've been working with our statewide organizations. I'm affiliated with PICO Florida, by the way. And, Liz, I know we've done some things with you before, and you've helped us out with some of our work here with the kids insurance. But we have some folks from all of our cities in Tallahassee today, and working with the legislators to pass a bill in the House and Senate that would help implement the express lane eligibility through the hot lunch program. And it looks very promising for that to happen this session.
Thanks, Pat. That's great news. And I did receive your email about that from Peter, actually.
Yes.
It's good to know that progress is there's still the efforts underway to move forward. I think we've heard from all of our speakers today that there's a lot that we can still keep doing and that there's a lot of interest in actually moving forward on coverage for children right now.
Liz, maybe we could just focus on this for just a moment. I noticed on the InsureKids Now website that under Express Lane, both Louisiana and Oregon have been approved for doing Express Lane in relation to school lunch. The last time I checked on those, Jen, they weren't at the implementation stage, but I do know that New Jersey, one of their CHIPR outreach grants, was really doing a much stronger model in one school district associated with school lunch, although I don't think they've officially applied for that as a SPA. Do you know more about the school lunch possibilities? Because I think it would be of help to our friends in Florida as they're trying to get this bill through.
Right. On,
I think, you know, we definitely have made some progress. I'm pretty sure that Alabama is also, no, they're not doing school lunch, I'm sorry. So, right, Louisiana is. We can certainly, you know, make a connection if people are interested in talking a little bit more about how it's going in Louisiana and Oregon and the extent to how far that's been implemented. We'd be happy to talk more.
Okay. Well, and we can check to our friends in Florida. We can check. It sounds like we're always looking for good blog material to check in with our friends Ruth Kennedy and others in Louisiana and Kathy Kaufman in Oregon. I know Liz and I are going out to Oregon in March, and we're doing a site visit and doing some work with our Finish Line team there. I'm very interested in this topic, and we know that schools are just a great place to be doing outreach as well as to think about how we can make those connections with school lunch work more effectively through the new possibilities of Express Lane. And, you know, the early state experiences in and many of you who have been involved in CKF for a number of years know this, that sometimes, you know, we learned a lot of good lessons in early experiences with school lunch, like duplicative kids that were already enrolled in Medicaid and CHIP and submitting applications or interest. And I think we started to get beyond those and figuring out ways that you can go straight, you know, into the sort of the Express Lane action. So we'll keep our eye on that and hopefully be able to get something up on a blog that gives you a better sense of what's happening.
That would be great, Tricia. Thanks.
So pretty much you would probably stay with the communication.
So, Howard, do we have any other questions or comments?
No additional audio questions at this time, ma'am.
Okay. Well, I want to, again, thank all of our speakers, Jennifer Ryan, Sandy Erb, and Tricia Brooks, for taking the time to share their wisdom and knowledge today. This has been a really helpful call, and I hope that it's given you all some ideas and thoughts about how we can continue to make progress in what we know is a really challenging environment. There is a lot that can still be done, and there's a lot of interest in working on these issues. As our as Patty just indicated, they're working on it in Florida, and I know I've heard from folks in Nebraska who I think are on the webinar that they're working on some stuff there to maybe do administrative renewals. So we are all available to talk with you more about how you can make it happen. And as Jennifer showed on their website, and that they have teams now that are available to help states move ahead. We're all here to help you, and please be in touch with us with any questions or help that we might be able to give you. Thanks again for being with us, and have a nice day.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for participating in today's program. This concludes the conference. You may now disconnect. Everyone, have a wonderful day.